So, John, what happens when you take 250 episodes of our podcast, 9,500 minutes of deep dives into leadership, future thinking, human evolution, and throw in some artificial intelligence for good measure?
Wow. You either get a very, very long audiobook, or you get The Expansive's brand new book.
Yeah, a book filled with 52 essays, one for every week of the year, designed to help you live and lead with more clarity, creativity, and courage.
It's like the gym for your brain, but without the sweating.
Yeah, unless you are running on a treadmill, in which case, respect to you for doing that.
This is 5 years of work, thousands of hours of research, global keynotes, multiple books, all distilled into bite-sized, brilliant essays.
Yeah, so if you're someone who's hungry to evolve, stretch your thinking, and live a more holistic life, both personally and professionally, The Expansive book is for you.
Available now. Read it slowly or devour it in a weekend. Either way, your future self is so grateful already.
Hi, and welcome to The Expansive Podcast, a podcast hosted by Eric Kruger and John Sarné. It's an award-winning weekly show that invites listeners to expand their thinking in business and life. Launched in late 2019, the podcast quickly became a go-to resource for navigating a world of rapid change. Each episode offers insightful conversations on how to thrive amidst uncertainty, with the two thought leaders sharing research-backed ideas and personal anecdotes. That is the Expansive podcast. Yeah, yeah. If you want to go and do a bit of a deep dive into The Expansive and ask ChatGPT to spend a few minutes looking at the pod, devouring the pod, that's what you'll come back with. So for those new, that's probably the best introduction that you can get to the pod. And by the way, my name is Eric.
And I'm John.
John Sarné is sitting on the other side of this mic. John, who are you? Tell us a bit about you.
Who am I?
What do I do?
Jeez, you caught me off guard. I don't know who I am. I love the future. I always have loved the future from a very young age. I don't know why, but I've always had a nose for what's coming next. And I really practiced this idea of innovation and being different for many, many years. And I loved it. But then I got caught up in a business that I stopped innovating in. And so I was very, very successful in my 20s, stopped innovating, went bankrupt, and went through a process of self-development. And now I combine the idea of evolution of humans with the future, preparing ourselves, our organizations, and our children for what's coming. And that is really and truly my highest fascination and excitement. You, Eric, what do you do? Who are you? How'd you get here?
Well, following your same format, I guess my obsession has always been about helping others to improve in some shape or form. And what that looked like for many years was to help people to do that physically, because I graduated as a physio in 2007. Realized that it wasn't for me. Pivoted to a self-development community for men called Better Man. So went from helping people figuring out how to get more mobile and regain strength and flexibility and all those kind of things, to helping people figure out how to be better in, I guess, their masculinity, in their relationships, in their health, and then found my way into the leadership and team space. And that's where I am today, helping leaders to figure out how to adapt faster and lead smarter. So, yeah, in a nutshell, that's who we are. Yeah.
Adapt faster and?
And lead smarter.
Very nice. Okay, yeah, I like that. Like, nice line. Yeah, you are very busy. I mean, all your videos are, and all the work you put out is so consistent around these themes and has been for a very long time. And you're also writing a book with John Sarné. Tell us about that book.
Yeah.
Tell us about this collab with John Sarné.
What an honor. And I really actually mean that.
thank you.
Yeah, no, I mean, the book is coming out pretty soon. We're recording now in April. 31 March. The book is coming out in May. Dude, I mean, I can't believe we're here. You know, 240 plus episodes later, 9,500 minutes of audio later, and we've taken the best of the best thinking that we've had on the pod, and we've combined it into a book. And I'm so happy about it, man. You know, I attended Richard's book launch last week, And there's something really special about being able to provide that container for ideas. And we live in a world where ideas are abundant, and you can jump onto any podcast today and get lots of ideas, including this one. That's why we do it. And you get it for free. But there's just something about someone taking the time to curate those ideas and package them neatly into a book. And when I spoke for Richard at the event, I opened the event and I said that there are two types of authors in 2025. The first type of author is someone who stares at that blinking cursor on ChatGPT. And then they say to ChatGPT, write me a 30,000 word book on, you know, X, fill in the topic. Then they copy and paste that output. They take it to Fiverr. They ask someone to design them a cover, ask someone to typeset it into a book. They run to Amazon. They publish it on Amazon. They into like a very niche category. They ask their friends and their family to quickly go and buy the book. Lots of people buy it in a very short amount of time. It fools the algorithm into thinking, oh, this must be a very popular book. It pushes it to the top of the list for like a few seconds. And then before that book even hits that top spot, they're already on LinkedIn saying, I'm now a best-selling author. And I said that in that scenario, no one wins. Because as an author, you didn't win because you don't embody the ideas that you are sharing. It hasn't become a part of your worldview. But as readers, we actually lose in a big way because all we are reading in that moment is repackaged AI slop. So we, as readers, we are the biggest losers in that scenario. But then the second type of author is someone who wrestles with ideas, who fine-tunes those ideas through conversations, through being on stage, you know, through their writing. And ultimately, once they have enough material, then they go and say, well, how do I package this so people can consume it? And in that scenario, everyone wins. You know, the author wins because they have a new book out, they can go on the road with that, they can make money off it. But as readers, I'd argue, we are the biggest winners because what we get is the benefit of time compression. You know, so someone has taken all that time and now it's been compressed for us into a few hours of reading. But we also get the benefit of curation. You know, there's so many ideas out there. Not all of them are created equal. What we want are the ideas that has the highest leverage, the most impact. And I think someone who's taken the time to distill it into a book gives you all the benefit. And so in that case, I'd say that as readers, we are the biggest winners. And I really think that what we've tried to do here is to set our readers up to be the biggest winners through 9,500 minutes of audio compressed into a short reflection every single week.
Jeez, dude, that was quite the answer, eh? That was unbelievable. I was just having shooting the breeze with you. Like, how's the book with John Solid? Jesus. We went deep. Do you want to bring anything up from your childhood through that process as well? No, that was brilliant. Okay, yeah, I agree. I agree so much. I do use this example from my friend Maria in Puerto Rico that messaged me on LinkedIn, I mean on Instagram, and said, John, I know you've written a bunch of books. Could you read one of my books for me? And I was like, Maria, I didn't know you write books. She's like, yo, this weekend I wrote 5. I was like, that's not writing books, sister. But either way, that is what's happened. But I also think that happens in every industry. And I think what happened, do you remember pre-2008? I remember driving around South Africa and I remember every corner had dozens and dozens of real estate signs. And what happened after 2008, those dozens and dozens of real estate signs became 3. All those real estate companies started to fade away. And what happens when you are a cowboy about knowledge and you are trying to do it for the wrong reasons, you eventually get caught out. It's like somebody pretending they have a degree they don't have. It's like, it's coming. Plus, you also know that you're talking shit behind the scenes. And so you're carrying that level of guilt and fear of being caught out continuously. And look, I guess we've all done something like this once in their life. I did this once. It was so embarrassing. I was exhausted. I don't know what was going on. It was about 8 years ago. And somebody asked me to write an article, but I just didn't have the time. I didn't have the headspace for it. So I just took something that I had copied from a talk that I'd listened to and put it there. And dude, I swear, like, I don't know, a week later, a friend of mine messages says, this really sounds familiar, what you've written here. It's like, it sounds like this talk that I listened to. I was like, you know what? You're actually so right. I was so out of integrity. And, you know, the whole time knowing that I'm going to get caught out, and then it's embarrassing. Like, it's almost like your whole thought leadership is now up for question. It's like, does everything this person do a little bit dodgy or whatever the case may be? So, you know, the winners always show up, because I always say writing a book makes you better. Like, you as the writer are much better for it once you finish that. And, you know, I'm reading, I've got it here right now. I'm halfway through Future Memories. And again, distilling one word, like, for example, in Future Memories, you and us, like that very simple switch between you and us, you should, we should. Mm. When you are out there, we as humans should. And just that small tonality change to say, and you know, my least favorite thing is when a speaker stands up or an author, they speak to you like you are the one that needs the help. And the truth is that we all need the help, because we are all in the same boat. You think nobody doesn't have triggers, and nobody doesn't have trauma, and nobody doesn't have something that tweaks them. And so I never want to be seen as that author or speaker that comes up and says, well, look, kids, I've got it all sorted. Let me tell you how it's done. And you know, whenever I see an interview with an author, and like, yeah, I wake up every day 4:30, and then I do this every day, and then I do this every day. I'm like, bro, please, but shut up. You look like an idiot. So yeah, just like small tweaks here and there are really, really important. So yes, what a win, and really an honor for me too. You know, I am a big fan of the way that you put words together, and you know, we're obviously very different. I'm exceptionally good looking and tall. You ugly and short. So the it's a sideline joke, guys. I call Eric ugly all the time. And well, let's all remember that I could never call him ugly if he was really ugly. So either way. I really enjoy the way you put words together. And so to have this book come out, and I've been reading certain chapters of it, and you have taken the lead on the details. And I will tell everybody at our launches that you did do that. But it's a fantastic experience to put out. I mean, I even messaged you the other day, you know, like, I'm reading it and I'm like, it's so good, dude. It really is so good. And I'm not saying this because I read a lot, and I'm a biggest critic of my own things as well, but it's so well put together. I think the combination of Karen, UI, and ChatGPT putting it all together has really given it a succinct, smart, witty, uplifting tonality. And the truth is all we want to do is we want to help people live more expansively, including ourselves. And so it's a journey that all of us are on together. And so we're looking forward to launching it. And if you're listening to this, if you live in Joburg, Dubai, Cape Town, we'll be coming to that city soon to do a launch. And so looking forward to seeing you there.
Mm. Listen, dude, so with that, I think let's jump into the pod for today. And I actually want to preface this, you know, AI has been... And it kind of ties in well with the authorship thing here. AI has been advancing rapidly in the past 3 weeks. And we kind of see this where I think there's this constant level of growth that's happening at the moment. But then we have these moments where it just feels like things are being pushed forward very quickly. And so ChatGPT came out last week with their new advanced image generation capabilities. And of course, like, it just took the internet by storm, and everyone's been generating content and all these Ghibli, like anime style, you know, type.
That's right.
Pictures.
Yeah.
And it's raised a really interesting question, I think, for a lot of people around creativity and IP, because I saw this guy, he's the CMO of LinkedIn, and he made a post, and I found it a bit earlier. He just said, AI won't constrain creativity. It'll set it free. And I saw that, and he was posting it in the context of the Ghibli style animes. And I thought, like, he's getting it wrong, because creativity is not just going onto ChatGPT and typing in a prompt and copying someone else's creativity into your world. That isn't creativity. And I think it's very important that we be quite clear about what is a creative act and what's not a creative act. because otherwise I think we end up in a kind of weird space where people feel like they are being creative, but actually they are just part of the, they're part of the AI slop. They're part of the generation of they're creating messy products, like things that look like everyone else's. Like, if you think this is creativity, being able to copy someone else's style onto your photo, then you don't understand what creativity is.
Well, can I caveat here?
Go for it.
If you don't mind. Because I think and I actually disagree, and I'll tell you why. And I think it's good that we disagree. We've had some listeners say to us, you and Eric should disagree more. I'm like, okay, but I don't disagree with him. I agree with everything he says. I can't pretend to disagree with Eric. Here's where I disagree, is because I think you're taking into account and limiting what we understand creativity to be. So what's always been the case is the creativity was drawing the picture. That was what was creativity was about. But as we evolve into this new world, I think the shortcut initially would be to create this thing using AI without much creativity. But understand that once this becomes the standard, to stand out, that will require new creativity. So you understand that I think that at our current level of understanding of what our capacity of creativity is, this isn't creativity. I agree 100%. But you're also not taking into account the new types of creativity that are going to be birthed because this has been taken away as a standard of creativity. So again, let's think back to agricultural times. Is you couldn't tell agricultural people that they were going to have new types of jobs, new logical ways of thinking. It would not make any sense to them. It would make zero sense because we just didn't have the awareness of what the potential of what that could be. And we thought that if you go work in a factory and not work in the fields, you were being lazy. Or if you went to work in an office, you weren't adding that much value. But we weren't taking into account the forcing of new types of creativity because the rudimentary things got taken away. So I think if you think about, I've tried to do one or two AI workshops. Dude, I don't understand what they're saying. Mm. And I think their type of creativity is now in building AI agents. Like, that's a brand new type of creativity. It's not art anymore. It's building systems that are able to speak to each other in brand new ways. So I think in our current format, I agree with you. But let's not take into account, or let's not forget that over the next 6 months to 12 months, we will be able to access new types of creativity that will be even more wow than we ever expected them to be.
So I actually don't disagree with what you're saying. I think that AI is going to unlock lots of new ways of being creative. My problem isn't with AI being the medium for creativity. My problem is thinking that if I upload a photo of myself and then ask ChatGPT to put this into the Ghibli style anime, that's an act of being creative. No, I don't think that's being creative.
No, okay. No, that's not being creative.
Yeah. And I think that's what the guy was kind of saying. It was like, oh, now you can go and you can put any format or video into any style that you want. And somehow he was equating like you being able to prompt a system for that, for creativity. I've seen a guy who, you know, he might not be a great designer, but he's always had certain ideas around what brands could execute. And now all of a sudden he's been bringing that to life through ChatGPT. I think that's very creative because he's using his own thinking and his own ideas of the world and what he thinks brands could do, and he's bringing that to life. To me, that's very creative. I don't care about the medium that you're using. I just care about how you're using that medium. And in a way, I feel sad. I don't know what the word is, maybe for the guy who created this anime style, because it really is something that he's created with a lot of love and effort and skill over the years that people have now just copied. Like, all his IP has been taken.
But
I don't know. It's an interesting question.
Isn't that disruption?
It is.
That is disruption.
But isn't that also just IP theft?
Yeah, I guess, yes, it is. But we also then limiting to the aspect of understanding what IP's potential is. Like we're saying, well, you drew the anime, that's it. That's it for life. You must have an IP for that for life. Well, no, it's evolving. And he will then create something new and then something new. Look, I love the fact that this is forcing us to think about creativity in brand new ways, forcing us. And what usually starts to happen in these spaces, the people that used to be creative aren't creative in the new ways. They get disrupted. That's kind of, so you get this 21-year-old kid in New Zealand making $400,000 a month teaching AI agents. Dude, 21 years old. He surpassed me. He's now the king ding. I'm not. Like, I don't understand what he's even talking about. So I agree with you, but I think there's so much better coming. And yes, currently, yes, people are getting disrupted left, right, and center. But that is what evolution's about. You have some losers that didn't do anything wrong. They just end up losing.
Yeah. I think that's what makes us so, like, such an interesting time, because these are the conversations that don't have a clear answer. You know, we're kind of operating in the gray. And you could make valid arguments, I think, for both sides. So it is interesting, but I think it's also my call to action. Actually, I'm just trying to get across, and this is with the authorship thing, it's also with this creativity thing, is don't outsource all of your thinking and all of your creativity to ChatGPT. Don't think because you are good at prompting that replaces your creativity, or that should replace your thinking. We spoke about that Microsoft study that said people who outsource critical thinking to AI, to LLMs, ultimately become dumber for it, because as it turns out, critical thinking is a muscle. If you don't use it, then you lose it. And the same is going to be true for your creativity. You should still engage in the process of creativity. You should still sit and try and connect your own ideas. Don't just every time you have a thing, go to ChatGPT and go, oh, figure this out for me. It's going to hamper you in the long
run. Yeah, it is. It is. And today's pod is about ChatGPT asking yes. Eric and I questions. Eric, you lazy shit. What sort of creativity is this? With the lack of creativity, let's go to the lack of creativity here. To the heart of the lack of creativity.
Today's episode is inspired by one of my favorite YouTubers. He's a guy called Sunny. He has a channel called Best Ever Food Review Show. And it's been amazing because I followed his journey from being a very unknown YouTuber to someone who has 11 million plus followers. And what's made his channel great has always been that he has a lot of humor in his channel. You know, he doesn't take himself very seriously. And he has a second channel where I think he has about 4 or 5 million people on it at the moment. And his entire motto for that channel is half the effort, twice the fun. So on that channel, he really just goes for, like, you know, a very chilled vibe, recording with his phone, makes mistakes, doesn't care. So I thought we'll do a Sunny-inspired episode today. Half the effort, twice the fun. So the half the effort part is that I went to ChatGPT and I asked it to ask us some questions. Now, we've done this before and it's been okay. It's asked, like, pretty decent questions, but nothing mind-blowing. This time, I used deep research, which is ChatGPT's one of its newest features, where it can really go into depth. And I asked it to research the expansive and to come up with really thought-provoking questions based on what it finds. Now, if you haven't used deep research, it's pretty interesting. You know, it doesn't just come back with an answer to your question immediately. It really takes time to go and browse the web, and it does, or it goes through multiple sources and then ultimately combines them to find sort of the best answers or the best questions. So just a quick aside here, it also shows its thinking. And this is what ChatGPT was thinking while it was busy researching the expansive. So for example, it starts with saying, I'm piecing together information on various platforms like theexpansive.com, John's website, Eric's website, LinkedIn, et cetera, et cetera. I'm examining John's site for archived episodes. Okay, let's keep scrolling John's page to find out more. The podcast progression is evident through shifts in format, including masterclass episodes and potential guest interviews. Okay, let me keep scrolling. And then it does this thing where it says, I'm scrolling through John D. Dumas's episode list. It seems he doesn't really feature external guests, but then it corrects itself. I'm thinking how this snippet might actually be from my other podcast. Maybe there's a mix up here. So it takes you through its entire line of thinking of how it's doing the research. Amazing. Which I find really fascinating.
Yeah, so good.
So then it came back with all the key themes and topics. that intro I read was from this ChatGPT deep research that was given to me. It says the tone and style of the expansive podcast is conversational and upbeat, yet insightful and direct. As longtime friends, John and Eric engage in lively banter between friends while tackling serious ideas. This easy rapport gives the show a relatable feel. Listeners often remark that they feel as if I know you, although we've never met, thanks to the host's personable storytelling. Then it goes into the content structure. It talks about how the pod has evolved. The one thing that it did mention, which I thought was quite interesting or funny, was that it said guests on the pod, wondering if the podcast often features high-profile guests like Obama and Mandela.
Jesus, okay.
Obviously, it thought that things that we have a certain caliber of guests that we are looking for on the pod.
Yes,
anyway, so it goes through this entire like breakdown of the pod, all the episodes we've listed, a target audience. This content is tailored for leaders, innovators, and lifelong learners who crave both practical advice and big picture insights. So if you're a listener, that's what it thinks
about. Congratulations.
Yes. Yeah, congratulations. I think it's very complimentary. And then finally, we get to the point where I asked to give us a few questions about what we've spoken about in the pod. So given the time, I think let's do maybe two or three of these questions.
It gave you 15 questions, right?
Listen, it gave me 15 questions. I haven't looked at them yet. We're going to look at them now, and I'll choose three that might seem like a good fit. All right, so let's start with this one, healing the leader. And this might be a question more for you, John. You've spoken about the pain body in personal growth. How important is it for a leader to heal their own emotional baggage? What practices can leaders use to ensure their unresolved issues don't trickle down into their team's culture?
Oof. I wrote about this in my second book, Magnetize, which was all about shadows, that we all carry these shadows. And I explained my own shadows in my marriage and a whole bunch of other shadows that came up. Shadows, pain body, trigger points, kind of the same thing. And I explained why so many leaders are highly intellectual, but are very short-term in their thinking and are greedy in their processing. It's because of the shadows. It's because of the healing that hasn't taken place. And so the pain body, and we spoke about this recently, that I was in deep in a pain body for a day or two, and just super triggered for very basic things. I didn't even know how to even get out of it. And I think what leaders can do is two things. One, become aware that this pain body is not you. And I think that's really important, is that we often, we own the pain bodies, and the pain body is an unhealed version of yourself that's been triggered by something on the outside that has brought your defense mechanism that you've developed as a child to the surface. That's why when you get men that are aggressive and fighting, that's very childish. And you get women that are gossiping and not taking responsibility, it's very childish. And these are all trigger points that come up for us. So the first one is not becoming an owner of that pain body. And the second thing is that when you get into that pain body, realize that there's many modalities to want to go and heal them. One, becoming friends with the citizens of your town or your city, which we've spoken about already. When you name and highlight these characters into different characters and love them and heal them. Or you can take on the idea of healing your past through family constellations, ayahuasca, psychedelics. I don't think therapy works to that level because it's quite conscious, whereas with meditation, ayahuasca, mushrooms, family constellation, it's quite subconscious or unconscious. And so you're really wanting to deal with the unconscious aspect of yourself, altering your state into a meditative state or into an ayahuasca state, whatever the case may be, to be able to see objectively what's going on in your life. Just this weekend, friends of mine did 3 days of ayahuasca, and I was on the phone with them last night, and lots of tears, lots of insights into about their marriage, into their business, into their physicality, into what they've been through. And all of that was really brought up by going into an altered state that ayahuasca and psychedelics can actually give you. Otherwise, sitting in therapy for hours doesn't really do that. So unbelievably important. In fact, I think even more important than intellect is this ability to move away from pain bodies and not get triggered. But the combination then makes you dangerous. That's really the key.
There we go. Love it. Good answer. You know, what since exploring that world of altered consciousness, like the going or exploring the unconscious through meditation, psilocybin, that kind of thing, I think I've come to appreciate the fact that there are things that you discover in those spaces that needs to be cemented in consciousness, right? Discovered in the unconscious, cemented in the conscious. And I've spoken, you know, or I think of a few people that I've met along the way that have done these sort of experiences, and then they come out of it and still nothing changes. And it's kind of like if you see a certain pattern in your life and you want to figure out, like, why are you the way you are? Like, what has created this pattern in your life? And then you go back and you realize, oh, as a kid, this thing happened to me and I had this response. And as a result of that, today I am who I am. That's great. But that awareness in itself doesn't change you. It is what you then do with that. But the problem is that part of you might be locked away. So you might need some sort of assistance in helping to go unconscious and getting to that and going, oh, this is what happened. But then once you've had that realization, what you do in the conscious state is really what is going to either make sure that it pulls through, there's follow through on it or not. And even if I think of, you know, for example, knobs to dogs, right? It's been like the mantra of the podcast this year is, can we turn knobs into dogs?
Explain that to listeners that don't know about knobs to dogs.
When I did a journey last year, something that sort of crystallized for me was that I had a bit of jealousy towards people or resentment towards people. And the message that was sort of delivered for me was, you have to treat people like you treat your dogs. And that's because my dogs get my utmost compassion, my most empathy, the softest part of me, my dogs get. And so it was just a reminder to, when I see people that I maybe disagree with or that I feel jealous towards or anything or resentment, treat them like I treat my dogs. And it's been a game changer for me. And you shortened that for us to knobs to dogs.
Because when you first told me about it, I was so angry with you because my body was bucking it. No, I like to hate them. Leave me alone. I want to hate those bastards. Then I've got to turn knobs into dogs. Now, every time I think they're a knob, I feel guilty. So thanks for that.
But this is exactly what I'm trying to get at, is that conscious part now is the reminder of the practice. So it's the two work together so complementary, and you need to know when to go to which.
Yeah, very good. I mean, some people become workshop junkies, right? They just do workshop after workshop after workshop after workshop after workshop after workshop and do nothing with it. And then they stay the same person.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And the ability to change your behavior afterwards is really the toughest part. When you see the trigger come up again and to want to react differently to it, that becomes a hard part. But, you know, most people don't even see that it is a trigger or that there is an opportunity here to work on. And so that's why the awareness of the fact that it's not you is such a relieving idea. And the second part is that it can be fixed. You don't have to be in a pain body all the time, or when you get triggered, is really the second piece that allows you this freedom to explore new possibilities and new behaviors. So yeah, it's a very personal journey that only you and yourself can keep yourself accountable for. Nobody else can. And also be easy with yourself, you know? Also be easy. So what if you fall off the bandwagon? It's okay. It's okay. So just keep going. If you can see it, fix it. Doesn't have to be immediate. You know, I also have made that place for myself, is that I don't have to be black and white. I can also live in the gray for a bit until I can get that behavior to done. Whereas before, I used to scold myself for not getting it right immediately. And that's also not very helpful.
Dude, you know, you say that so, it's so easy to listen to that. And it sounds kind of like by the by. But it's such a huge thing. Like, if you could just get that thing right, you know, your life changes. Like, because we live in this permanent state of like scolding ourselves for not being far enough, not being good enough, not having done enough,
not being pure enough.
And I mean, if we could just really integrate what you just said, Like, it's so huge.
Look, I think it's ultimately becoming friends with yourself. That's actually what it is, because you wouldn't treat your friend like that. You know, so like, why would I always be upset with you for not changing your behavior? And like that time at lunch when you were upset with me for not changing my behavior. And I was like, yeah, but I'm also, I understand that I'm in this gray, and I come with history. I come with trauma. I come with triggers. And and I'm saying this quite openly, is because you are upset with me, and I understand why you are upset with me. Not upset, but you were just like, no, I think you should be better than that. And in my own head, I was like, I've had that conversation. I'm patient with myself to get through this. I want to get through it, but I don't want to scold myself through the process. And that means that you are scolding yourself through the process. Remember we did that part about people being critical? And so when we are critical about people out there, we've been critical internally to ourselves, not giving ourselves that patience level that is required through the process of change. And that patience is a friendship process you have with yourself. It's okay. Soften towards yourself. You're not perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that.
I think we should stop
listen,
here.
I think we have so many other questions, but I think like this has actually been, it's been gold, and it's been like, this is actually just stuff to sit with, you know. So let's not rush on to next topics. We have a bank full of things that we can come back to now when we feel like we need to do half the effort and twice the fun. Yeah. But I think this has been great.
Yeah.
So everyone, thank you for tuning into The Expansive. I hope that you've learned something. I hope that you've enjoyed spending some time with us. That ultimately is really important to us. Exactly as ChatGPT said, is that we want to create friends on the pod. And what you are seeing here is really the backstage. You know, when we get onto stage, because we are both speakers, we bring everything that we've thought about and curated, and you know, it's a well-polished show that you see when we step on stage. But when we sit on the pod, it is just us, the behind the scenes, the chilled versions of ourselves, the thinking through stuff, wrestling with stuff versions of ourselves. And so it's great to have you along with us on this journey. Be sure to keep an eye out for the book. As we've said, it's coming out in May. And until next week, be expansive.
Ciao.